Kristen Bry. We are rolling through this Election Day show. And I'm very excited about it because I don't know what he's going to say, but he told me that he has an idea of how to fix our elections.
Absolutely.
And I can't wait to hear what they are. Author and radio legend Steve Palick is here. And so actually, we have another radio legend. I have a radio legend as my producer. And so, but you guys didn't cross paths in all four decades that you guys have been on the radio?
Not for years.
No. And we finally physically met each other, I think about 6 months or so ago. But I've known of Jane forever, and that's probably what you would say, right, Jane?
Well, and I listened to you, Steve.
Oh,
and
thank you.
And just an incredible breadth of musical knowledge. And you know that I've been good friends with Carol Kane for 35 years. So
yeah, that's the misnomer about radio. People think that everyone hates each other at various stations, but you end up getting fired so much you work with everybody. So, you know, it's a mistake to hate anybody.
That is an excellent point, Mr. Palick.
Thank you.
That is really funny as far as the rotating doors.
Oh, for sure. But that excellent point will pale in comparison to when I get to blow your minds about my election idea.
All right, let's just start there because you brought your book. We could talk about bourbon. There's
right.
tons of stuff. This half hour is going to fly by, but let's start because it is election day.
Okay.
Let's start with your election idea. How do we fix this?
Here it is. And this came from a bourbon-fueled evening, sitting in front of the TV, being bombarded with commercial after commercial after commercial. I think there's one thing, maybe the only thing, that everyone in this state can agree upon, whether you're a Republican, Democrat, Independent, or totally apathetic. We all feel inundated by commercials. Mm-hmm. We're all sick of commercials. They're ridiculous. Who can stand another commercial? So here's what I started thinking. And actually, I wrote this down, so I need to be accurate.
Can you read your own handwriting after you've been drinking?
Yeah, I have a really good handwriting.
Oh, you do have your handwriting much better than mine.
Yeah. I don't know how that ever happened, because I'm certainly not neat about anything else, but except the way I drink bourbon. I like that neat. All right, let's take the Wisconsin Senate race.
Okay.
Approximately $80 million was spent in advertising by the candidates. Approximately $113 million was spent by outside interest groups. So we're talking about around $200 million on the Wisconsin Senate race. $200 million. Here's where I had the idea.
Okay.
Do you know what the population of Wisconsin is?
Is it somewhere between 5.6 and 5.8?
That's really, really good, Chris, because I just scribbled down 6 million.
Okay.
It makes the math easier, because here's what I started thinking about. $200 million was spent on one race. There are 6 million people in the state, there are only 3.4 million registered voters.
Yep.
So, quick math, $200 million divided by 3.4 million, that's $57 per person just for the Senate race. Here's what I thought. Wouldn't it be great if we could have the money instead of the ads? And so, you're probably going to wonder when I tell you this idea, why am I giving it away? It's because I'm pretty lazy. But here's the idea. Imagine an app where you could go on. Let's use Jane as the voter.
Okay.
Jane, you could go onto this app, put in some innocuous information that anyone could find out anyway. And if you want, I know a lot of stuff about Jane. I could tell you later if you want. But let's say you go to this app, you just put in your demographics, some information about you. That's not all that secretive. And then, Kristen, you be the candidate. You go to this app and you want certain people to see your ad. $57 goes to Jane for watching the ad. Now, we could actually get into the weeds and say maybe it's $5 or $10 a time, etc. But imagine if there were an app where you had potential voters could register and watch ads. The candidates know their ads are going right to people who care, right to people that promise to watch it. Imagine all the money that could go right into the pockets of people. And this was, I just gave you one example of one race at $200 million that was spent. Imagine all the races, all the candidates. Would you or would you not use this app?
So wait, so the value for the voter is you could get paid
you
just
get
to
paid
watch the
to
ads.
Watch the ads. Instead of the giant crapshoot that goes on right now of all these candidates spending astronomical amounts just to hope that they can sway someone's opinion, this way they know someone's actually watching their ad and maybe get $5, $10, $20. It doesn't matter. You could add up a lot of money as a consumer watching these ads. The candidates are spending their money and it goes right to the people they want it to.
But what if it's only like a small portion of the population?
That what? Signs up for the app?
Signs up. You'd have to pay me a lot to subject myself to just willingly sit there and watch ads.
Really? How many do you watch?
Well, I feel like...
Without even wanting to. Right.
I mean, more than I want to.
So would you, if I handed you right now $10 for 30 seconds of your time, would you do that? Or does it need to be 20 or 25? Just for watching
$10 for 30 seconds is a pretty good, it's a pretty good margin.
I honestly think this could revolutionize advertising in elections.
Steve, I sense one potential flaw with this plan.
No, I disagree, but go ahead.
Remember in the old days when we would do contests at music radio stations, and there were certain listeners who had things timed out so that they would always win. Mm. They would win and win and win and win and win, and all the other listeners kind of got locked out of a lot of these contests, and we had a not very nice name for these people called prize pigs.
Right.
Prize pigs?
Yes.
Exactly.
And you got to know their names and and who they were, and because they manipulated things to the, they had it timed out for every radio station so they would win across the board. And I see those same people, although I guess that's their choice.
Yeah,
to sign up for the app, and then, you know, they'll watch 900 ads.
That's a valid point, but I do think, Jane, that there is, when you're talking about $200 million spent on advertising for just one race, there's plenty of margin of error to take care of those prize
picks. That's true.
I think I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. The reason why I don't think it will happen is not because there's not will to do it as far as people. Like, I think voters would want it, but the media companies who are making all this money, they miss out.
I thought of that too.
All right.
All right. So here's the answer. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, it is like Christmas for TV and radio stations.
Yep.
But at the same time, I've talked to some people in that industry that have to go to their regular clients and say, hey, I can't fit you in because all of our slots are taken up by political ads. So there will still be political ads on TV and radio. That doesn't get eliminated. But to make up the difference, I think then you go to your various Camp Lejeune attorney solicitations and people that want to sell you replacement windows, and there's more room for them.
There's more room for the classic Wisconsin jingles for the small businesses.
Right. They don't get pushed off to the side during those election cycles.
All right. Our guest this half hour is radio legend and author Steve Palik, and he's telling us about his ideas on how to fix the election cycle, specifically when it comes to ads. See, I just think we should limit how long the ads can run for. Like, I think other countries have dialed it in a little bit more, but you have 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And you have to stop ahead of the election for X amount of days, or same thing with the polls. Like, I feel like going into election day and having the polls and every news outlet saying, well, this poll says this and this poll says that. And like, that can persuade people or dissuade people.
Yeah, I can see that. I could argue that either way, but I'll argue all day for my app idea.
Who benefits from the app? Who gets paid for the app?
So whoever has the app takes a little slice on both ends.
Okay.
So if a candidate's paying you $10 to watch a 30-second ad, the app will take 50 cents. And 50 cents maybe from the candidate, 50 cents from the viewer, kind of like Uber.
So then who pays for the promotion of the app so that people know that the app is available?
The person that steals my idea.
Fair enough. All right.
See, I've thought this up.
Clearly, this is like a genius. I don't know how people haven't thought about this before.
No, that's what shocks me. Somebody's going to do it.
It's bourbon inspired. I think that's what's special about it.
So what, have you voted?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
And by the way, that's one thing that I feel adamant about. And by the way, I have voted for people that would surprise you. I literally am one of those people that votes for the candidate, not the party.
That's good.
And for all of my life, as soon as I realized I could, in a lot of different formats, from mail to in person, once I realized that I have to wait in line and I could vote early, don't take that away from me.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
It is a good thing. I mean, because I think we had something like 800,000 people have already voted,
exactly.
Which is probably a good fraction of what the expectation, I think, will be of how many people vote overall in Wisconsin. And I went to Fiserv over the weekend, super easy, in and out. Exactly. I know Jane voted early.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big proponent of it. Obviously, you have to balance that against, you know, is something going to happen after your vote is cast. But I don't enjoy waiting in line for anything, not even Arby's.
I don't like waiting. What's the last thing you waited in line for? Because you're like, oh, it's important enough to sit here and wait, even though I hate waiting in lines. Because I won't wait for brunch.
Yeah.
Like, there's very few things in life that I'm like, well, I can imagine what the payoff will be, and it'll be worth sitting in line.
Bucks, Brewers, Packer games.
Okay.
I know I have to wait to get through the metal detectors and all of the accoutrements that they want to go through my pockets to see what I have. I've learned that you can sneak bourbon in if you do it in a plastic container because that won't set off the metal detectors.
Ah.
But I get it. I'll wait in line for sporting events.
You could be like, they now make bras for women that are actually flasks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we could get you one of those.
Wow.
you'd be an A.
Yeah.
You'd be an A cup. Yeah. Size you up. I'm trying
not
to
if
think.
I stick my chest out.
Wait, what's the easiest place to sneak bourbon into? Are they all similarly easy?
Oh, my wife absolutely hates this.
Okay.
But I use little pill bottles from like Walgreens, and I pour bourbon in the little pill containers and put it in my pocket, and nobody has ever stopped me anywhere from that. And if they do, I'll just say it's prescription. And the downside to it is that she is so embarrassed when I start drinking this liquid out of a pill bottle in the middle of all these people around us.
So you don't even like get a cup to transfer it? You start drinking out of the pill, like the little orange pill bottle.
Exactly right, yeah.
You need a little teeny straw.
There are lots of products out there. I mean, I've like suntan lotion containers that, you know, you can put liquids into. There are endless possibilities, but I just go with the pill bottle.
And is this because it's too expensive or that they don't serve bourbon once you get there and that's the only thing you want to drink?
Both.
All right.
You're absolutely right. Most big venues will dissuade people from drinking shots and hard liquor. I mean, you got that many people in one place, I can understand why. So they dissuade people by both only pouring it into mixed drinks or on way too much ice, or by overcharging for it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about bourbon because that's also my drink of choice.
Excellent.
I drink it like it's wine, which is not advised. Our guest this half hour is Steve Palik. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Steve Palik, author, radio vet, and you brought me your book.
Yes. Hope you like it.
I'm sure I will. And I just told you I'm going on my my honeymoon, so this can be my beach read.
Excellent.
Beatles, baseball, and bourbon. Are these your three favorite things?
Absolutely. Well, not including food, my wife, my dog, and my kids in that order.
Okay, in that order. Yeah. Kids definitely being the most stressful out of those
exactly.
things. So we share, I do love the Beatles and I do love baseball, but of those three, what I consume the most of is certainly bourbon.
Excellent.
So what is your favorite, what is your go-to bourbons?
My go-to is probably Blanton's when I can get it.
Okay.
And there's so many. It's endless, the amount of bourbons that are out there. But what I have learned over all of these years are two things that even fervent bourbon drinkers don't think about. Are you familiar with the Kentucky Chew?
Chew?
Yep.
Like tobacco?
Nope.
No.
The Kentucky Chew, and therefore you probably don't know about the Kentucky Hug.
I don't know about
it. All right. Well, the Kentucky Hug is that feeling of warmth that you get when you drink bourbon. But the Kentucky Chew is the absolute best way to drink bourbon, and it is something that will blow your mind. I know I've used that already today. This will change the way that you drink bourbon. And it is a great trick for people that don't typically like bourbon. You want to try it?
Yeah.
All right.
Because he brought, it is election day. It's not too early for a drink, right?
Exactly.
So
If you include the producer.
Yes, exactly. We've got to give some to Jay. So this
welcome.
Is Jay Henry, which is made in Wisconsin, right?
Exactly right. An
Can it be bourbon if it's not made in Kentucky?
Sure. Okay. Absolutely. There are a lot of rules about bourbon, and they involve how much corn is in it, how long it has to be in the barrel, but that's an excellent segue, because one of the rules is bourbon goes into the barrel as a clear liquid, and it gets its color and its flavor by sitting in a brand new charred oak wood barrel. It has to be brand new. Now, that's where the Kentucky Chew comes in.
Okay.
Because a lot of people think of bourbon, it is a whiskey, but not all whiskey is bourbon. A lot of people think it's a shot. It is not by any means a shot. It's a sipping drink.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember I said it goes in as a clear liquid. Here's what I'd like you to do. Take a little sip of bourbon, but don't swallow it. Keep it in your mouth for about 10 seconds. Chew it around. Move it. Don't swallow it. Think of it as a Jolly Rancher, because as it goes into that barrel as a clear liquid, it comes out with a brown color and an oak taste. You can swallow now. Now, you or anyone trying this at home has not tasted bourbon. Right now, what you have tasted is your taste buds being inundated by alcohol. That's all you taste.
Okay.
The Kentucky Chew, what you just did, is the way to get ready to taste it. Now, I guarantee you, people that take a shot of it as the first time they try it are going to go, that's horrible, that's terrible, and will have the same reaction you did while you were trying not to gag.
No, I like it.
Okay.
It was just, I was using it like mouthwash, and so I was like, I've never done this before.
Okay, now... Your second sip, what you try now, is actually the first time you're tasting this bourbon. Does it not taste completely different?
It's much smoother.
You're tasting right now, because your taste buds are acclimated to the alcohol. Now you're tasting what I described about the fact that this clear liquid, this moonshine, has picked up the flavor of the oak by going in and out of the wood as it sits there for 2 years. What you're tasting right now, and with each subsequent sip, is the real taste of this specific bourbon.
I've never learned that. Where did you learn that on the bourbon trail in Kentucky?
Mm-hmm.
It does make a difference. I have to say, for as much bourbon as I have drank in my life, I've never learned that. And it certainly tastes different these last two sips from the first one.
And I have to say, I'm relieved that you only have to do that once, that Kentucky Chew, because otherwise you're going to be sitting alone at the bar for a really long time.
Oh, yeah. And one of the reasons when you asked me a question, I went, is because I was doing that. And I still do it to this day. After drinking bourbon, my first sip is always going to be chewed for 10 seconds.
That's a really good trick. There Can you do the same thing with, is it just with bourbon that you're supposed to do that? Because I feel like when I see like very fancy wine,
I suspect you could, if you wanted to, you could do it with antifreeze, but I don't recommend it. But I've only like learned
you
it for bourbon.
You do you, man.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I'm just saying. I suggest you do it with bourbon, but everything else is on you.
Exactly. So. And by the way, one of the reasons that I do like this bourbon, J. Henry, which is made in Wisconsin, is because the components of bourbon, it has to be 51% corn. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that people think of Kentucky and bourbon, not only because they produce about 95% of the bourbon, but they have excellent corn, they have excellent water, and they have really weird weather where it can be snowing in the morning and then warm in the afternoon. And as the bourbon expands and contracts in the barrels, that weather helps it. Well, think about Wisconsin as it relates to those three things.
Yeah.
And that's why this comes from a farm outside of Madison where they have phenomenal corn.
Yep.
And so good corn, good water, and weird weather will make good bourbon.
There you go. That is a good trick.
Learn
two things. How to fix elections.
Yeah.
Or at least how to fix political ads and the Kentucky Chew.
Yeah. So I put bourbon in you and I want to put money in your pocket.
Yes,
too.
Perfect. All right. So before we let you go, in the 2 minutes that we have left, any radio advice for a radio newbie?
Oh, okay. Well, I would say the best lesson I ever learned about radio is how can you have a fake name, a fake voice, and a fake persona and expect to communicate with people?
Mm-hmm.
If you're that fake, using a fake name, a fake voice, and this, by the way, is my real voice,
and real name.
And real name and my real warped personality, too. It's sincerity, and you have that in spades. You have a phenomenal personality, so just be sincere, and there's no stopping you.
That's very good advice. Thank
you. Well, actually, there is stopping you because there's nowhere to go in radio. But if it weren't for that, you've got a name.
All right. Well, this went by way too quickly. Steve, we're going to have you back, but I'm going to go on vacation first. But when I come back, we'll have you back. We're going to talk about baseball, Beatles. We have so much more. We only scratched the surface.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in today. Thank
My
you for
pleasure.
The bourbon.
You're
Steve
welcome.
Ballack, everyone.
Cheers.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. Don't say